Catherine Albrecht is a consumer privacy expert, the founder of Casbian, Consumers Against Supermarket Privacy Invasion and Numbering. It's a national consumer organization created in 1999 to educate you about shopper surveillance. Catherine has conducted extensive research on surveillance technology used in retail stores, uncovering everything from homing beacons hidden in grocery carts to microphones that record conversations at sit-down restaurants. Catherine has even found evidence of tracking devices being planted in people's shoes. Catherine holds an undergraduate degree in international marketing and a master's degree in instructional psychology. She is currently completing her doctoral studies at Harvard University, where she is writing her dissertation on consumer privacy and consumer psychology. Pretty important issues. Catherine, tracking devices in shoes, is that real?
Believe it or not, George, I actually saw that demoed about a year ago at a conference demonstrating the new RFID, or radio frequency technology. Someone held up a pair of running shoes, pulled back the insole, and there underneath was hidden an RFID tracking device.
That's unbelievable. They'll know exactly where they're going, where they're jogging.
Well, you take that and you couple it with the fact that already the ability to put these the reader devices that can actually track and read that tennis shoe into embedded into carpeting, woven into floor mats. In fact, in Japan, they're even experimenting with the idea of laying down reader devices in the sidewalk, so that literally every public place people walked would be capable of reading these tags if they wind up in our shoes.
Why do they want to do this, first of all?
Well, it's quite an extraordinary technology. The RFID, or radio frequency identification technology, for those of your listeners who aren't familiar with it, is using a tiny computer chip, in some cases the size of a speck of dust or a speck of sand, hooked up to a little antenna. And they want to put it on every consumer product on planet Earth, literally everything manufactured in every factory across the globe, within the next 10 to 15 years to replace the barcode. And the reason they want to do it is that a barcode, in order to read a barcode and to get the information in there into a computer, you have to hold the barcode up to the barcode reader, you know, when you go and you do your self-checout or whatever.
Right.
You've got
to
hold it.
Scan it across. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's called line of sight. Well, line of sight is kind of a pain if you want to scan, for example, the contents of a crate or a box without opening it. So what these tiny RFID tags with their little antennas make possible is to actually scan things using radio waves at a distance. So what that means is now, let's say you're unloading a box from a truck or a shipping container off of a big ship, and you can run it into, as you're loading it into your factory or into your warehouse, you simply, by walking past the reader device, all of those individual tags signal their presence right through the box, right through the container, at a distance, in some cases, of 20, 30, or even more feet away, and say, here we are, this is what's in this box, without even having to open it. Now, obviously, from a consumer privacy perspective, having one of these in the sole of your shoe that you didn't even know was there could also be submitting information about you at 10 or 20 feet away, right through a door, right through a wall, right through a doorway, etc. And, you know, not only would it enable people to know what size shoes you're wearing, but it would enable people to know what's in your backpack, what's in your wallet, what's in your pocket, what's in that shopping bag as you walk through the mall, you know, potentially even what's under your clothes, the size and color of your underwear, as Benetton tried to do early last year, was actually had a plan to put 15 million of these tags into the labels of women's underwear.
15 million. See, and you're not opposed to tracking up until the point where they leave the store, right? Is, you know, if the store wants to know my goods have been bought, and this is the time they were purchased, and then they remove it before the consumer leaves. Could you accept that, Catherine?
Well, you know, there's really two issues to look at here, George. One of them is why the industry wants it, and they want it so that they can tag and track inventory. The problem here, though, I think there's a couple problems we need to take into account. One of them, once we perfect this technology and we put it on everything, It's going to start appearing in things like these shoes that are hidden. My concern here is that the industry is driving this. And by the industry, I'm talking specifically about Walmart, which has made a commitment, or actually forced a commitment out of its top suppliers, that they will be compliant with this technology by the beginning of next year.
And I thought they were going to back down. When you were last on with me last July, I thought Walmart had agreed to back off on that.
Well, there's two pieces to this, George. One of them is the supply side, and that's the fancy term for getting things from the factory into the warehouse onto the store shelf. On the supply side, Walmart has been extremely aggressive. Walmart and the United States Department of Defense, actually, have both issued mandates requiring all of the companies who sell products to them to put these RFID tags on the crates and pallets and shipping containers that go into their warehouses. Now, that doesn't affect us as consumers, because a crate or a shipping pallet gets dismantled and thrown away or reused, or it never really reaches the consumer. So that's not a concern for us from a privacy perspective. Where it becomes a concern for us is when they begin putting them on the individual products. So that, in that sense, it's not just a big case of 5,000 toothpaste tubes. It's actually your individual toothpaste tube containing an RFID tag, and that's when you start getting into some serious consumer privacy problems. And what we've found is there have already been so many abuses of this technology just in the early trial phases of people being sold these things and not told they were there, people being tracked and photographed and surveilled through the use of these on items at stores, that we actually don't even trust the industry to put it in the store. Even if they did disable it at the checkout, simply having it at the store is leaving it very ripe for abuse.
Years ago, when we went to the stores, everything worked. We got in, we got out, no information passed on. The system worked. Why are they changing it now? Why is it getting so complicated?
There's a couple pieces to it. One of them is the economies of scale are making it possible. You know, when we were kids, or when our grandparents were kids especially, there was a corner grocer in just about every neighborhood. I mean, there were hundreds and hundreds, probably thousands and thousands of different retailers across the country. What we've seen in the last 10 to 15 years is a consolidation of all of those retailers to the point where we now have these big national chains, and even those are shrinking on a monthly basis. We'll see one or two more go. People talk about the loss of biodiversity and sort of wring their hands over, all the animal species that we're losing. I spend a lot of time wringing my hands over what I call the loss of retail diversity. We no longer have a lot of competitive options where if your store is doing something you don't like, you can go somewhere else. What it also means, though, is that these national chains are shipping products all over the country, and these products are coming from all over the world. Walmart is a great example. As many people have complained recently, many Walmart products come from China and from overseas. In order to get those products efficiently produced, manufactured, put together on trains to go to the shipping station, to go through customs, things are moving all over the globe at a really rapid pace. And one of the problems that they've run into with all of the globalization of industry is things get lost. They get lost, they get stolen, they get pirated, they get misdirected. And so this technology promises to allow them to keep better tabs on this big problem they've created by doing all of this international shipping and moving around of products. Now, from our perspective as consumers, you do gain something from having all these international products. I guess you gain in the form of lower prices. You also, as we've seen, you pay for that. You lose jobs, your economy
right.
struggles.
No, that's right. There's no question about
sure.
that.
And ultimately, I think the price that we're going to pay for this, if we're not careful, is we will absolutely lose every last vestige of privacy. And some of the most fundamental form of privacy that you could ever imagine. And George, what I refer to is, I don't know what's in your briefcase. I'm not there to see it.
I beg your pardon.
Even if I were in the same room with you, I wouldn't know what was in it, and you could put a lock on it, and you could prevent me from knowing that. Mm-hmm. We've always assumed ever since there have been human beings with eyeballs in their heads and things to keep others' prying eyes from seeing, we've always been able to assume that simply putting something out of the line of sight of another human being means they can't see it. So if I put something in my purse, I assume you don't know it's there.
Well,
this technology changes that. It actually creates the potential for other people to have a form of X-ray vision. And not just other people, but computers and the internet and the entire system. You know, there's the folks who developed this technology out of MIT, the director of this organization that put all of this together from 1999 until 2003, actually talked about a world where even sewing needles can be identified and located in real time anywhere on the planet through the internet. That literally everything would be numbered and everything would be continually tracked by a seamless network of readers so that the location of every item would be known at all times.
Now, let's go back a little bit. Who invented this? Was it one person, some scientist, or a group of people?
Well, the technology for using radio frequency for identifying things at a distance has been around for some time. What's new is that in 1999, a brand manager, actually a manager for Oil of Olay skincare products at Procter & Gamble, got this bright idea and said, what if we could take this radio frequency technology and apply it to products? Instead of just applying it to airplanes and, you know, distant things we want to keep track of, what if we kept track of everything that way? So he apparently went to his superiors at Procter & Gamble, and they said, well, you know, great idea. Why don't we hook up with some research scientists who can pursue this? So what they did was they got together with Gillette. So Procter & Gamble and Gillette got together with the MIT scientists and engineers there.
Right.
MIT, of course, is the Massachusetts Institute of Technology right down the street from Harvard, where I'm a doctoral student. And they got together pretty much behind closed doors and worked on two things. One was developing the technology, perfecting it, making it small enough, cheap enough, fast enough, and efficient enough to literally put on every product on the planet. And number two, and this is maybe even more important, they worked on the political piece of this in terms of getting funding from some of the biggest consumer product groups in the world and also some of the biggest government agencies in this country and elsewhere. So what they wound up doing between 1999 and 2003 under the radar screen of the whole world was they got together companies like Coca-Cola, Philip Morris, Kodak, International Paper, Kimberly-Clark, Unilever, all the big guys, along with retailers like Walmart and Target, and also along with government agencies like the Department of Defense and the U.S. Postal Service. They got all of these together, and by the time they were ready to unveil this to the world, they had 103 sponsors who had spent millions of dollars behind the scenes perfecting this RFID technology. And those are the folks who are in a position to unleash this sort of on the rest of us, pre-made, ready-made. Here you go. We've got it. We're ready to start putting it on products. And the main thing they want to communicate to the public is, you know, it's inevitable. There's nothing you can do about it. And they're hoping for consumers to be apathetic and resign themselves to their fate about having the entire physical world tracked through the internet at all times.
Some people, Catherine, would say, hey, companies now, especially in this country, need some kind of marketing edge, and maybe this is one way of getting it, where they can stay a little bit above the curve. How do you answer that?
Boy, that's where this gets really creepy. When you move beyond the supply side, moving stuff around applications, and you start looking at the marketing applications, it's quite chilling. Many companies have already been experimenting with different ways to apply this. One of the more worrisome is the idea of actually planting reader devices, hidden reader devices, in the doorway of stores, banks, and other places when you walk in, and having that reader device buried in the floor or hidden in the doorway scan you as you walk through the door. And that would mean they would know everything you're wearing and carrying. They'd know whether you're the type of person who wears, you know, the $3 throwaway flip-flops, or whether you're the kind of person who wears the $400 Manolo Blahnik expensive shoes. They would know what kind of watch you're wearing. They'd know whether you bought products that they could sell you, you know, similar products. Do you remember the film Minority Report?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Tom Cruise is walking through the mall, or actually escaping through the mall, I think, and all of these billboards are calling out to him, you know, would you like this product to go with the other thing that you bought last time you were here?
Yeah, exactly. They knew him, so, yeah.
That's kind of the plan. Yeah, and they've developed, let me give you a couple of very specific examples for people who say, oh, come on, they wouldn't do it. One of them is Texas Instruments and Sprint have both come out with loyalty card applications. Now, anyone who's heard me speak in other venues knows that I got started doing this myself in 1999, fighting those grocery store loyalty cards or those frequent shopper or club cards. Because every time you scan one of those, you are allowing the store you're shopping at to collect a very in-depth record of everything you buy every time you shop. And that information, oh boy, I didn't want to hear that, George. Go to our nocards.org website and read up a little bit about what happens with that information. What we found, and not to digress too much, but what we found were that the prices are much higher at stores that have those cards than at the competing stores that don't have them, because there's a huge infrastructure of data collection that goes along with those cards. So I got interested initially in the whole consumer privacy issue around those cards. That's actually how I got my start. And the more I researched and the more I dug and uncovered, the more horrified I was to see how much information they have on us, how they've put in these the infrastructure of surveillance in the store itself. They're actually grocery carts with GPS devices that will track and record how long you stand in front of the bread display, for example, and link
You're
all of that
kidding.
Up. Absolutely. Albertsons has one in place, actually, and they're being tested in many other places. So they can actually put hidden tracking devices in your grocery cart. They use your loyalty card or that frequent shopper card to link all of the information from your grocery cart back to you at the point of sale. So now they know where you go and how long you linger, and they also know your value to the store. They know, in the words of one grocery industry analyst, who to treat well and who to treat poorly and offer higher prices and poor service to from the moment you walk through the door.
Like, don't waste time on that guy. He doesn't spend much money.
That's the idea. And in fact, one industry consultant actually says you want to discourage those low profit shoppers from even coming into your store. And one way you can keep them out of your store is by treating them badly. Now, you take that to the next level when you have... See the problem right now, let's say you're one of these creepy industry consultants, and you're trying to consult the grocery store as to how to keep people out. The problem is you don't know who is low profit. You don't know who maybe just recently lost their job or maybe going through a divorce and doesn't have a lot of money. You have
to
treat everyone
people,
the same.
Some people without a lot of money are the biggest shoppers, for example, at some of those stores.
Right. So your question then at this point is, how do I know who is not profitable to me? Who buys the items, only the items that are on sale, for example?
Well, why do they care, though, Catherine? Why don't they just sell their goods to whomever comes into the store?
Well, there's a trend in the retail industry to identify what some industry analysts call bottom feeders, and I think that's a horrible term, and it's terribly insulting.
Is that what they call us?
That's what they call the folks who are not high-profit shoppers. And this is because about 15 years ago, they did a study, and they found that the top approximately 25% of shoppers account or amount for about 75% of the profit. So if you can identify those top-tier shoppers and cater your store around them and treat them special, then you can retain their business and get them to spend even more money at your store, and that's where most of your profit comes from. Now,
so, I mean, would they have greeters, Catherine?
Well, I'll actually get to that in just a sec when I talk about how RFID ties in with this, because they're actually planning exactly that. The greeter who either treats you well or spits in your eye, depending on your value.
They pick and choose who comes in, and they don't say hi to the one who spends a lot of money.
Well,
they go right to the good person.
That's the idea.
A lot, huh?
And you know, by the way, just in case any of your listeners are out there saying, "Well, you know, that's me. I'm one of those big spenders, and I kind of like being surveyed and or surveilled and having all this extra special treatment."
And some do.
Well, what I would say to those folks is, be careful what you wish for, because if you are one of those top tier, most profitable shoppers, you are the reason everybody is trafficking and selling data, because you're the one they want to buy and sell data on. So you're under the microscope, believe me, and your privacy is mud.
All right, we'll be back with you, Catherine, in just a moment, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Fascinating. I'm George Norrie. And welcome back to Coast, Catherine Albrecht is our guest tonight. Catherine, now some people are saying, hey, what's wrong with this stuff? Maybe it'll help society. How do you answer that?
Well, you know, onto the marketing topic we were talking about, let me give you a couple of examples of what has already been done with this technology. I was saying Sprint and Texas Instruments have both developed a loyalty card application where your little frequent shopper card, the one you carry to get the supposed discounts at the supermarket, would actually contain an RFID tag inside of it. So it would have a tiny computer chip with a unique number linked up to you, and it would have an antenna that would enable people to read it from a distance. Well, the idea of how they want to use this is actually as you enter the store, they'll be able to identify whether you're, you know, pretty much which kind of shopper you are. You're the high roller shopper that they want to keep an eye on and train all of their surveillance equipment on, including floor sensors and heat trackers and all sorts of things that we've uncovered, listening devices, fake shoppers who walk up to you and pretend to be grocery shoppers when they're really market research people, recording your responses. Are you that kind of person that they want to turn their surveillance arsenal on, or are you one of the low-profit shoppers that they want to discourage from shopping at the store altogether? And in either case, it's not a pleasant scene for us as consumers. You know, IBM has developed something they call the Margaret Program. It's named because the guy who developed it, either his mother or his mother-in-law's name is Margaret. And she was upset because the bank teller didn't recognize her and the high value of her account. So he developed an application for the RFID tag to be slipped into a consumer's savings passbook, their checkbook, or their ATM card, which would be read by the bank by a hidden device in the floor or in the doorway. It would identify who they were, and it would send a message to a PDA or a cell phone owned by bank employees so that they would know the value of your account, your name, and everything else about you the minute you walk through the door. Even if you were just coming in to use the restroom, they would know this about you. So it's quite worrisome to think that this could happen. Now, one of the things that you hope when you hear about things like this is, well, gosh, they'd at least tell us, wouldn't they? And what I discovered, I actually went to see the industry, the RFID industry's flagship store in all the world. They have one store called the Future Store, where they are, according to them, demonstrating the future of what RFID will look like in a store.
Is it neat?
Well, I flew out there to Rheinberg, Germany, and walked into the store, which I thought was actually pretty, it was pretty middle of the road. You couldn't really tell it was all fancy. They did have the grocery carts with the little computer things you can put on the front, mm-hmm. the little consoles, which I actually find to be kind of a pain. I don't need a map to know where the bread is. I can find it on my own. But they did have that unbeknownst to shoppers. That was also tracking their movements, their location, recording all of that information, just as we mentioned before the break. But the most worrisome piece of this is that they had put unique RFID tags on the products in the store. So as you picked up a bottle of Pantene shampoo or a package of Mach 3 razor blades or a package of Kraft Philadelphia cream cheese, on each of those was an RFID tag that could actually beam what it is at a distance. Now, they told shoppers that they would deactivate those at the checkout. What I discovered, though, when I actually asked them to demonstrate that, is that they actually did not deactivate them. We called it sort of the undead machine, the tags that would not die. They claimed to have deactivated the tags, but in reality, the most important part of the tag, and that's the unique ID number, which we'll get to and why that's so important, that part was left live on the tag.
On purpose, right?
Yeah, well, essentially, they had been boasting that they had the very first tag killer technology in any store. It turns out, though, that technically they weren't able to kill the tag. So it actually wasn't possible, and they were misleading people by saying that they could. But it gets worse, George, because I left the store, and I went to dinner with some privacy activist friends in Germany. And after dinner, we said to ourselves, you know, we should go back to that store because I forgot to get one of their shopper cards. You know, I've been collecting these for years from all around the world. So I go back, and it's pouring down the rain, and we let one of the girls run in to grab one. And 20 minutes go by, and she hasn't come back out. We thought, what happened? Did she get lost in there? Did they tie her up? What happened? So we sent somebody else in after her, and it turns out that they were arguing because they didn't want to give it to her.
Why?
Well, that's strange. I mean, you know, 22 million people carry this card. It's called the Payback Loyalty Card. 22 million people carry it. Why wouldn't they give it to us? So finally they managed to get a handful of them. And, you know, I didn't think much more about it until the following day. I'm giving a privacy talk, of all places, in a World War II underground Nazi bunker. Talk about how life takes you strange places. So I'm in this underground bunker, which has been converted into a coffee shop, and I'm giving a talk about privacy to a German audience of all just crazy places to be. And we have an RFID reader hooked up to the PowerPoint overhead presentation, and we're beaming this up on a wall. And I hold up the Pantene shampoo and the Mach 3 razor blades, and each one I hold up, and of course a number, a unique number, appears on the wall behind me. And somebody, as a joke, pulls out one of those loyalty cards and holds it up to the reader, and I about fell out of my seat when a unique number popped up on the wall. And what had turned out was that the Metro Future store, this is the flagship store for the Walmarts and the Procter & Gambles and the Gillettes and the Nestle's and the Kraft's and all these companies, their flagship store had hidden RFID tags in the loyalty card to test out this application and had not told a soul. So potentially, millions of people could be walking around being tracked at a distance of about 5.5 to 6 feet, which is how long these things could be read, could be identified in every doorway they walked through, every subway they got on, every place they went, potentially. And they were not told that this was happening. Now, this is what makes this technology so scary. It is invisible for all intents and purposes. The only way we were able to actually verify and prove to the rest of the world that we'd found this tag in there was we x-rayed it. And we have a picture of that up on our website at spychips.com. We call the RFID tags the spy chips. That's a term we coined. If you go to spychips.com, you can actually see in the menu on the left, there's a link to my tour of the Metro store. You can also see pictures of some of the protesters who turned out in Germany to protest against this technology. We're hoping to see similar things happening here in the States. But once they learned about what this store had been doing, they turned out in the midst of a snowstorm, actually, to protest this technology.
They did.
And you know what? It worked. They got the store to recall all of the cards and reissue ones that were privacy-friendly and did not have this RFID tag in them. Well, to the extent any shopper card could be privacy-friendly. By definition, they're not, but these at least weren't tracking you at a distance.
Are they using satellites to track the people with these devices?
They can't do that yet. And there's a couple of misconceptions floating around about the RFID technology. That's actually one of them, is that satellites can be used to track people. And let me see if I can explain what actually can happen. The RFID tags themselves have a read range of anywhere from a couple of inches to 30 or so feet. Now, the ones that have a couple of inches are the ones, for example, that you implant in an animal, say, at the vet or at the pound. You
know, for identification.
For identification,
right?
Purposes, yes. Those have a very limited read range for several reasons. It has to do with the size of the antenna. It has to do with the frequency they operate at and some other technical reasons. And also the fact that the human body and animal bodies, flesh, absorbs electromagnetic radio energy. So you can't really get a long read range on a person because as you beam the energy at the chip to try to read it, the body will absorb that energy, which gets us into a whole other issue. Is this stuff safe? I mean, you're going to be absorbing these rays everywhere they are kind of constantly throughout the day if they have their way and put these readers everywhere, because the reader is what gives off the electromagnetic energy. Those have a short read range. So if you embed it, for example, in a human being, and this...
And how do they do that? Do they shoot it, like, with a shot? Inject it that way?
There's a company called Applied Digital Solutions out of Florida that manufactures a product they call the VeraChip. They have a payment version of the VeraChip called the VeraPay. Those are their devices. And they drive around in this little thing they call the Chipmobile, and they actually have this little mobile implantation service where they will come and literally inject one of these RFID tags into your flesh, actually embedded inside of you.
Where do they put it? In your arm or what?
Well, typically they're putting it in the upper arm between the elbow and the shoulder. And about a year ago, there was a family which was referred to as the Chipsons, who did this on national TV on a morning program. And
yes, I remember
embedded
that.
Embedded with this, yeah. That's the same technology. The latest version of it, and we can talk a little bit about who's doing it and why, but the latest version of it would actually be embedded into the hand. And the reason it would go into the hand is, for example, to prevent a gun from firing unless you had this chip in your hand. And that's one of the applications that Applied Digital Solutions is trying to sell law enforcement officers on, that they would take a chip in their hand, and unless the gun detected the presence of that chip within an inch or so of the handle, the gun itself would simply not fire.
So in case somebody grabbed an officer's pistol, he couldn't use it against him.
That's the idea. That's the idea.
Well, see, you know, now on the face of it, Catherine, that sounds pretty good, doesn't it?
Well, and you know, that's the funny thing, George. I would be the first to acknowledge that there's all sorts of potential benefits down the road with RFID. I mean, some of the ones that have been touted is, you know, you'll know when things expire in your refrigerator because your refrigerator will be hooked up to the internet and people will be monitoring that information, you know, that kind of thing. Well, the thing I have to say is at what cost? And that's really the bigger question with this technology.
And who abuses it?
Well, who abuses it? And ultimately, even if it's not abused, you know, in the next couple of years, which I believe it will be because I've seen the blueprints and the plans for it. But let's say even if somehow we can create enough controls around it to prevent it from being abused for the short term, we all know just from looking at 20th century history that the power ultimately will fall into the wrong hands. You know, at one point in history or another. I mean, we've seen, you know, millions of people murdered in the 20th century by governments run amok. And if you have this technology out there, in exchange for the benefit of, say, saving some money in the supply side, maybe saving 2 cents off your package of rice because it got more efficiently into the store, maybe the fact that now you don't have to smell the milk before you know to throw it away, you can you can have a little alert on your computer telling you, you know, those are the upsides.
Don't drink this milk.
Yeah, but, you know, the downsides are so incredible. The idea of a technology like this that would enable everything and everyone to be monitored all the time, to fall into the hands of someone like Hitler or Stalin or Pol Pot from Cambodia,
mm-hmm.
you know, who murdered millions of their own citizens.
Saddam Hussein would have had a field day with
Absolutely.
This stuff.
Any dictator, any power, anyone who wants to stay in power would have the ability to essentially quell all dissent. And in fact, you would have the ability to make sure that your enemies not only couldn't fight you, but actually couldn't eat or couldn't wear clothing or couldn't survive, couldn't buy.
Is this something, Catherine, that the globalists would support? Maybe they do.
Well, I'm not sure quite what you mean by that, but I will say that I think that there are definitely people who are interested in amassing power, whether that is you know, power, economic power, whether that is just personal power, or whether it's the power to spy on and simply have knowledge about what everybody else is up to. And those people are rubbing their hands together and salivating over the possibilities here. Absolutely. One application for RFID that I think is especially chilling is the European Central Bank has been working with Hitachi on the possibility of putting these RFID tags into cash. Now, if you think you're under surveillance now, you at least have the option of paying cash if you don't want to be, you know, tracked from your every move and your every purchase watched. And in fact, I make all of my purchases in cash for that very reason. I know too much. I know too much of what happens to that data. Now, if you put this into cash, it means you have the possibility of eliminating anonymous cash. Now imagine this. You go to the ATM or to the bank and you get five $20 bills. You take out $100.
All right.
Let's say each of those $20 bills has an RFID tag in it with a unique ID number. And that's the key thing, and we need to talk about that before we finish today. The unique number means that no other item on the planet matches that item. So what it means is if you can identify that item, you know who it belongs to, who bought it, where it was last seen. You can know all sorts of things about it. So now let's say each of those $20 bills has a unique ID number that nothing else on the planet shares. When they come out of the ATM machine, a little note is made in a database somewhere at your bank and probably at the Department of Homeland Security and the federal government. A little note is made that $20 bill number 308247 was taken out of a bank by George Norrie. Now, the next place that bank note appears, they're going to know you're the person who spent it. If you go into Walmart and you use it to buy ammunition, or you use it to buy a pair of shoes, or you use it to buy, who knows what you buy in there.
Right.
But that $20 bill would then be linked to you. And conversely, if let's say you give it to a homeless person, it's Christmas, you're feeling generous, you hand it out, and that $20 bill later shows up, oh, I don't know, in a drug bust. The DEA agents, of course, would be scanning that money, and you would get a knock on your door. How did your $20 bill wind up in those hands?
I'd be the last person who legally had it.
That's right. And that's why they want to make cash trackable, because it would eliminate the drug trade. It would eliminate the black market. It would eliminate people paying cash under the table. Someone mows your lawn, you give them $20. Well, that may be a risky thing to do. Maybe you should report that $20 income and file it with the IRS.
It sounds like then that the push to get this in products might really be a veil to really want to use it for these other purposes.
Well, what's going to happen is putting it in products is going to create what's called economy of scale. It's going to make it less expensive. It's going to create, already factories are going up all around the world to produce these chips, to manufacture them cheaply, to make these tags. The infrastructure, the readers are getting smaller. I just read that there's a reader device out now that's smaller than a dime. That's actually the thing that can read these little tags.
Oh,
so, you know, all of this is going to get cheaper, smarter, faster, better, more efficient. And it's being driven by the Walmarts and the Philip Morrises and the Gillettes. But ultimately, it's going to be adopted by the governments of the world who want to use this to keep control of the citizenry and to watch people. It's going to be used by marketers. It's going to be used by criminals. It's going to be used by stalkers. It's going to be used by really anyone who could benefit from knowing what's in your pocket when you walk through a doorway. From knowing everywhere you go.
What point will they make it the law that a baby, a newborn baby in a hospital, would have to be injected with one of these?
Well, that's already being discussed. There is an RFID application that is actually an ankle bracelet. It's similar to what they put on people under house arrest. And there's a company out there that is marketing this product, that they would put one unremovable device on a baby's ankle in the hospital and another one on the mother's wrist. And the idea here is so that no one accidentally switches babies or takes the baby away or kidnaps the baby and it's hooked up to all these readers so you know where the baby is at all times, where the mother is, et cetera, et cetera. Now, of course, somebody's going to find a way to break through that system. And, of course, the next step will be we need to implant it directly into the baby, directly into the mom. And, the implications here are quite chilling. And I think this younger generation growing up is going to say, hey, that sounds like a great idea. Because they don't have that respect for privacy that we were raised with.
Well, when we come back, let's talk a little bit more about people in government who might want to abuse this kind of technique. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie with Catherine Ahlberg. Catherine, around the country now, specifically in the United States, does it appear that more and more people are opposed to this or for it?
Well, that is the million-dollar question, and I think it's the good news. It's the reason why I'm encouraged in what I do. We found last year some confidential documents from this MIT organization that has been spending millions of dollars to promote this technology. And what we found on their website, we actually typed the word confidential into the search engine box on their website, believe it or not, and it returned 65 confidential documents, all the way down to their secret Fleischmann-Hillard public relations strategy documents. We have all of those posted on our website at spychips.com. There's a link to them right there from the homepage. One of the things that we found in combing through those documents over a gigabyte worth of information is that they did their own internal studies, and they found that 78% of people they surveyed opposed this technology on privacy grounds. And that's an extraordinary figure, George. I doubt you could find 78% of people to oppose, nuclear war. I mean, it's really
huge. You never know the mood of people. The nuclear war, they may be only 42%, you know?
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, the fact that you could have that large of a majority of people who, when this technology is explained to them and they understand the implications of the technology, they come out just massively opposed to it. And that is one of the problems that the industry has been trying to come up with messages and methods and ways to pacify people. That's actually one of their words we found in the document, is how can we pacify people. They have been actively trying to find ways to put out fires, so when this technology actually is widely known and people turn out to protest it at the store level and turn out to march in the streets with picket signs, that they will have ways of soothing people's concerns. And one of the ways they plan to do that, George, is through calling this technology the improved barcode. And they will start, in fact, you've already seen it. If you've seen articles on RFID technology, some of them will say, you know, this is a huge threat for privacy. Other ones, though, will say, you know, isn't it wonderful? We're getting rid of that old stupid barcode and replacing it with this new, wonderful, state-of-the-art, fabulous technology. It'll mean you don't have to wait in line anymore. I mean, think about that. You can grab your purchases in the store. You can waltz through the doorway. the doorway will read all your purchases and automatically deduct it from the account linked to the chip in your hand.
Yeah, you've probably registered an account with something with your chip, right?
Well, linked to the chip in your hand. In fact, that's what this Vera Pay device is. Remember I told you that Applied Digital Solutions guys out of Florida, they've come out with a technology called the Vera Pay. And it's the same thing. It's a chip embedded in your body that links up to a credit card or a checking account and automatically makes the deduction. You simply press the body part against a reader and voila, instant deduction automatic. So the calling this an improved barcode is the industry strategy for making it seem acceptable and for making it seem like, oh, there's nothing to see here, folks, move along. We found that when they do that, they're leaving out some really critical pieces. And I promised earlier in the program that I would talk about the unique ID number. And by the way, before I forget, let me mention that I have all of this information on a videotape that's available on our website at spychips.com. You'll see the link right up there. And I spent basically an hour outlining all of this, explaining all of it, and showing all of the images of the tags. So it's a great way to kind of familiarize yourself with the topic. So if anything I say goes by too quickly, you can order the video, you can replay it, rewind it, show it to other people, and see it as many times as you need to. And that's on our website at spychips.com. So let's see, where was I?
What was it, though, Catherine? What was it that got you interested in the privacy rights specifically with this chip?
Well, my own personal story about this is kind of interesting. I was writing an academic paper for a law review on shopper cards, the grocery store loyalty or frequent shopper cards. And in the course of doing that research, I had over 200 footnotes in that paper, and I had it was over 50 pages long. In the course of doing that research, I ran across a quote by an executive from A.C. Nielsen, the market research people. And what the quote essentially said, and I'll summarize here, it said the barcode, oh, that's where we were going, so let me get back to that. But the barcode was, first there was the barcode, which gave us a great idea of what was selling. That enabled us to computerize our inventory and know what were the good sellers and in what quantities.
And it got us through the checkout line a little quicker.
Potentially, sure. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, once we went to barcode scans, right, we went from the person who individually had to punch in every item.
Well, you know, the only reason I hesitated in agreeing with you on that, George, is I shop at Trader Joe's quite a bit, and Trader Joe's just switched over, and I noticed it hasn't really saved me much time. They were pretty quick, those TJ cashiers.
I mean, they even have some checkout counters now where you can scan your own goods.
Yes, and all of the statistics coming out on that, we're getting a little far afield, but all the statistics on that show that you spend on average 2 to 3 and sometimes even 6 times longer in that line than you do in the other line because people aren't very good at doing themselves. But in any event, so I'm reading this A.C. Nielsen quote about the barcode. It says, the barcode was great because it enabled us to computerize what was being sold. The next great breakthrough was this frequent shopper loyalty card because it enabled us to know who was buying the products and computerize that. So not only do we know what's selling, but we know who's buying it. The next level of information. But they said still something was needed. Consider all the blind spots that we still don't know everything about the people buying our products. Something else was needed, and that something else is RFID, which will enable us to know the where and when of product usage. Now think about that for a second. Not only do they want to know who's buying the product, but they want to know when you're using it and where. And I'll tell you, the hair stood up on the back of my neck as I read this quote by an executive of A.C. Nielsen. It's fully footnoted in that paper, and I'm happy to send that to anybody who writes to me on the website and asks for it. But anyway, so I read this quote and I said, this has got to be a mistake, a misprint. There's no way. So I started looking around and I looked up RFID. This was back in early 2002, and I found there was very little written about it. But what was written was all referring to this organization at MIT. Well, I have taken classes at the Media Lab at MIT, and as a graduate student, I've spent a lot of time there. So it was not difficult for me to just walk over and attend some of their meetings. And I'll tell you, George, when I sat in those meetings, that's when I really said, oh, my goodness, what these people are up to. I sat in one meeting where I'll tell you two things that happened to me in these confidential meetings. One meeting, Someone said, won't it be great when we'll know every time the consumer takes the lid off the toothpaste in their own bathroom? That's a literal quote.
That's too much.
A literal quote. And by the way, in case you think that's far-fetched, these things can't be read by a satellite, so I don't want people to get the wrong idea. But their plan here was that your medicine cabinet would contain an RFID reader device that would keep track of all the stuff in your bathroom.
How about what kind of pills you get?
Well, that's the whole plan. In fact, when we said, well, how in the world are you going to get people to install this in their medicine cabinet, the answer was, well, what you'll do is you'll say, hey, it'll keep you from making a mistake with your prescription medication. And in fact, if we're lucky, we can get the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, to mandate that people have to have these in their medicine cabinets if they're going to get prescriptions filled. So that was their plan. And by the way, Procter & Gamble, who is, remember, they're the folks who started all of this in 99, they have a video out called The Home of the Future. And in this video, they have a refrigerator that keeps track of its contents and beams them over the Internet. Now, the reason they say you'd want this is so they could tell when things are expiring, or so that as you run out of milk, let's say the refrigerator would know when you took the milk out but you didn't put it back. And it could send a message to your local supermarket saying, hey, she's out of milk, so make sure to have that on hand for her. Now, some people think, oh, what a great idea. Well, guess what? Their other plan for how they were going to make money off of this is that your refrigerator would also send information in real time to your television programming company, who would then run ads to correspond to things you were running out of. So as you're running out of Miller Lite, they'll run an ad for Coors, and they'll make money off of that, keeping track of the things you're running out of and tailoring the ads to specifically
like
what's in your house.
Like your own personal billboards again.
What a terrible, terrible thought. I want to get back to this, how it's different from a barcode thing real quick. And we've identified three fundamental ways they're different. And again, if this information goes by too quickly, you can order the video by going to our website at spychips.com. There's a link there. I actually was flown out to Indiana last year by a Christian ministry that has an interest in this topic. And we filmed some fabulous videos, and they're available for sale through their website at 1-800-END-TIME, E-N-D-T-I-M-E. Or you can find their link at spychips.com.
Now, are you also using the nocards.org website, or are you
using both? Yeah, and it's been kind of confusing for people. Our organization is called Caspian. You can find us in Google if you ever forget the rest of it. You can just look up Caspian. That's sort of our title, our official title. I think we're the first Google hit, in fact, under Caspian. But the No Card site really specializes in consumer privacy around retail issues and around these shopper cards. It talks about how the databases are created and sold and how that information is abused. The Spy Chips website is very specific to just RFID issues. And we've been doing so much on that lately that we've got all kinds of links to magazine articles, and I was on CNN. I think I've got the video for that up, and NPR, and all sorts of media appearances. And of course, all the scandals that we've uncovered about Gillette and putting spy chip shelves up and taking people's pictures in Massachusetts without their knowledge, and all kinds of creepy things. So all that's linked from the spychips.com website.
Okay, now back to the barcode.
Yeah, back to the barcode. So you've got, essentially, we've identified three basic ways that RFID is different from a barcode. The first way it's different is that it does not require line of sight. Now, its advocates will say that's what makes it so great. We say that's what makes it so scary, because it means that someone can look inside of your briefcase, inside of your suitcase, and know everything you're wearing or carrying. And you may recall a couple years back that they had those facial recognition cameras in place at the Super Bowl in Florida. People were upset because as you walked through the door, a camera was taking your picture.
Yes.
And comparing it against mugshots. Well, that's child's play compared to what you can do if you have an RFID reader in the doorway, and we fast forward 10 years and have these on every product. What it means is you walk through the doorway and totally silently and invisibly an inventory of everything you're wearing and carrying down to the size and color of your underwear could be made by that doorway and stored in a computer system. So now they know everything on you, everything associated with you. They know you've got a cherry chapstick in your pocket. They know the size of your shoes. So that's I'm sorry, George.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, that's really the first way that it's different from a barcode, because a barcode you have to actually hold up to the reader so you know when it's happening. If you have a loyalty card from your local grocery store, in order for that to be read, you have to voluntarily hand it over to the cashier and say, here you go, scan it, know all my business, I know you're
right.
Doing it.
Right.
This thing, if it's in your pocket, it doesn't matter how it's oriented, whether it's turned sideways or whether it's jammed in the bottom of your purse, simply by walking through the doorway they can read it. So that's a really crucial difference between the barcode and the RFID tag, in that it can be read at a distance. Now the
Hold on for 1 second. I want to give you three numbers. 666. You, of course, know what that means.
Oh, boy. Absolutely. Yeah, the 666 is the mark of the beast, as described in the book of Revelation in the Christian Bible.
Could this thing be that?
Well, the way the mark of the beast is described is it will be a mark, or it actually uses a word that could also mean a prick or a stick, that will be required in everyone's hand or forehead in order to buy or sell in the end times of history, right before the apocalypse.
Right, so, and it sounds exactly like what they will be using it for with us.
Well, that's where you get into this the VeriChip or VeriPay implant. It actually is designed to be implanted, ultimately, I believe, in the hand, so that in order to make a payment, you simply press your hand to a reader device, and voila. The Bible is extremely clear that anyone taking this mark will be essentially separated forever from God, and you know that's pretty
well,
much the end of it for you.
And to those who would say, "I'm opposed to it. They can't force me. I won't do it." Let me use this example. How many people, willingly or otherwise, have a Social Security number now in this country? Everybody. I even think babies have them now, right?
Yeah, they assign them automatically at the hospital.
Yeah, I mean, and so where's the protest with these Social Security numbers? You can't get a job without it. You can't do anything without it. So everybody's getting it. So what I'm saying here, though, is those people tonight listening to Coast to Coast and listening to you are probably saying, "I'm not going to get it. They can't force me to get this." Look what they've done with a Social Security number. It's the same thing. They can just move it a step forward, and everyone will be compelled to have to do this.
Well, and you know what's funny is when the Social Security number was first introduced, there was a big outcry against it because people were concerned that there would be this number associated with them. In fact, the Mark of the Beast was one of the issues raised over mm-hmm. the Social Security number, and it also was raised again over the barcode. And I think it's kind of ironic how all of those concerns were later dismissed, and here they seem to be converging in just the same way.
So do you believe that they can force us to use it?
Well, I think that it will probably be voluntary in the early stages. There will probably be benefits, just like, you know, how voluntary is that grocery store card that you carry? You know, you can decide not to carry it, but you will be paying on average 20 to 40% more for your groceries if you choose not to have it. We've actually identified some grocery items that are 2 and 3 times more expensive if you don't carry that card.
If you don't use it, that's true.
Yeah, so you can say it's voluntary, but, you know, for people who argue it's voluntary, I say, how likely would you be to carry it if there were no penalty for refusal? You know, if you could get the same prices without it, would you volunteer your information to the store, or are they twisting your arm in the form of higher prices to get you to do it? The same, I think, will happen with RFID payment devices. If you have it, you'll get perks, you'll get benefits that ultimately will turn into penalties for people who don't have it. You know, if you choose not to have this thing in your medicine cabinet, you may wind up paying double or triple for your health insurance because, of course, they'd be taking a risk. Your HMO would be taking a risk that you might screw up on your medication or taking a risk that you might drink that expired milk out of your refrigerator if you're
Good
not
point.
Being monitored. So I think initially it will be, you know, oh, it's completely voluntary. No one can complain because there's no, you know, we're not forcing anyone to do this. It's your own free choice. And, of course, at that point, once they've got, just like the grocery store cards, they have an estimated 80% of people in this country have one of those darn cards. So at that point, you know, that goes to 90%. And then the 10% of us who refuse to do it are going to be out of step. You know, what are you, crazy? You've got to do it. You have to register your food because if you don't, my gosh, you could buy something that was tainted or something that was contaminated or there could be a recall and we wouldn't know who had bought it. So you last holdouts are going to have to sign up. Now there's a law, and it's mandatory. And, of course, the 90% of people who are already doing it don't even think twice. Well, of course there should be a law. Everyone should be doing what we're doing. So, yeah, I think that's probably how it's going to progress with the chip implants. I think we're going to see people now. By the way, I don't know if you've discussed this on your program, but there was a chipping event in Barcelona, Spain, where a whole bunch of nightclub goers were implanted with
devices. Oh, yeah, we had that.
Yeah.
We had that. And what they would do is just scan their hand over the bar, and they wouldn't have to come up and pay money. And some of the perks that they gave them, Catherine, were they allowed them in line. They didn't have to wait in line. If they had this chip, they'd be able to get in line right away. That was the perk. No waiting in line. Come on in. And then you'd order your drinks, and instead of paying for it, you just go, you know, swipe your hand.
This reminds me of, George, I'm thinking about this because I just flew back from a conference where I was speaking on RFID on Friday. And as I was getting on the plane, as I was leaving Washington, D.C. to get on the plane, they had replaced all of the check-in counters with machines. And there was only one person working. And they said, well, you don't have to use the machine. You're welcome to stand here in line for the person. Well, I stood there in line, and I watched probably 30 people go through the machine, zip, and right onto their... Meanwhile, I'm looking at my watch. I'm getting late for my flight. That's the way they convince you to do it.
Absolutely.
They make it so inconvenient not to do it.
And
but
you
even
have
though
to...
it's voluntary, it starts becoming kind of mandatory.
And you have to have a credit card in order to get into the system. But once you do, you can get anything you want there. You can get your boarding pass, you get your seat number, you get it all. We'll be back with you in just a moment. Here's one thing to think about, though, Catherine. How can this be abused? How can they abuse the privilege and do this? We'll be back. Catherine, how can this really be abused? And give us the worst case scenarios.
Okay. Well, you take the tracking devices that are already being put in Michelin tires. Sorry to give people bad news, but Michelin is planting RFID tags in those tires. You combine that with RFID tags in license plates, which is what they're experimenting with over in England or considering doing. You put a chip in everyone's hand, and you put a chip in every product or every physical item on Earth. And when I say every item on Earth, there are even plans underway now, or at least being investigated, to chip every tree on the planet. Literally every sapling on the planet would be embedded with an RFID tag. Well, the idea is so that you can do an inventory of the forest resources, and you'll know where every tree is. And if someone cuts down a tree and they try to transport it, you can scan it. You'll know right where it came from, and you'll be able to track it back to the source. There are RFID tags for animals. They even have RFID tags for mice. They have them for birds. They've super glued them onto the wings of birds. I mean, this stuff, really, the plan is to put it on everything and have everything continually monitored 24 hours around the clock by reader devices everywhere. Now, if those reader devices are hooked up to the Internet, which of course they will be, then there is the possibility of relaying that information in real time all the time. So now imagine that you have a chip in your hand and a chip in everything you own. Or let's imagine that you're a Christian, for example, who is forbidden by their religion to take one of these chips in their hand, or in fact probably anywhere in their bodies for that matter. And let's say you decide that you're going to somehow get outside the grid. You're not going to be a part of the system. You won't be able to. If your plan is to go off and live in the woods or in a cave somewhere and have your brother-in-law, who's willing to buy into the system, supply you and your kids with clothes and food and items, that's not going to work, because when he goes and he buys that pair of shoes at Walmart for your kid, it's going to be registered to him. And when he gets in a car to drive it out to your hideout, wherever it is that you are, he's going to be identified as he drives. The items in his car are going to be identified as he drives, and when he turns around and drives back without that pair of shoes, a note's going to be made in a computer somewhere. And if that happens enough times, it's going to trigger one of those data mining computer programs, which are already out there watching us. It's going to trigger one of those programs to say, you know what, I think we better investigate that guy a little more closely. Let's say you, for example, get caught, and they scan your kid's shoes. They'll know who's been helping you. So, you know, the idea that Anne Frank could actually hide someone, or could actually be hidden in someone's attic for the number of years that she survived through World War II before she was finally turned in and killed, you know, that would be impossible in this new system. Because if you bought, you know, say a little dress for Anne Frank and your kid wasn't seen ever wearing it, or the Gestapo could bust down your door and scan your daughter's dresses and find that, gee, you know, a third of the things you bought just aren't here. Where are they? You know, Fraulein, whatever. it makes it really, I think this fundamentally changes our concept of what privacy feels like, of what society feels like, of what it is possible for the government to control, what is possible for people to know. And I think it's truly terrifying. I think one of the first changes we will see is we will see less and less anonymity. The ability to be anonymous will be gone. I was just singing an old Peter, Paul, and Mary song, you know, the freight train, going so fast,
mm-hmm.
those of you who remember back to the 60s and 70s. And it says, you know, please don't tell what train I'm on so they won't know where I've gone. You know, it's a beautiful song. It's a very catchy tune. And, you know, I was singing that, and my husband said to me, he said, you know, please, so they, don't tell them what train I'm on so they won't, wait a minute, we're demanding ID now of everyone who gets on a train. I live outside of Boston, and we just had an announcement that the Boston Transportation Authority can stop anyone at will and search your bags now, with no provocation and no.
That's the downside of security because of terrorism.
Well, and so you take the terrorism, and all it's going to take is, you know, terrorism stepped up. I mean, in reality, we haven't really had a lot of serious terrorism since September 11th. If you took that and you stepped it up and you had a dirty bomb or you had some sort of real big terrorist event again, I think people would be lining up to take these chips. I don't think it's going to take much for our government to want to do it, and it's probably not going to take much, unfortunately, for people to submit to it. And, you know, if you could see my bookshelf here in my home, I've got a bookshelf floor to ceiling, 4 feet across, and it's all about the atrocities of the 20th century. There's an extraordinary book out there for anyone who wants to sort of get on the same page. It's called Death by Government by a man named R.J. Rummel. He's a professor in Hawaii. And what he did, he's a political scientist, and he went back and he actually calculated the number of people killed by their own government through history, and found that essentially your own government is the most lethal force on the planet, essentially. You know,
yeah, but what are you saying, though, Catherine?
Well, what I'm saying is that if you empower your government, if you create this potential, if you create this technology and unleash this power out into the world to know every tree and every forest and every mouse and every yard and every child born in every hospital and every thing in every purse, ultimately, that power is going to fall into the hands of some of these very evil dictators. And if we're moving to the point where we're seeing greater consolidation of grocery stores, we're also seeing greater consolidations of government. I mean, look at the European Union. You know, look at the free trade, of the Americas. We may soon be moving to a point where we've got one currency, which would be RFID tagged, where we've got, you know, potentially just a couple of competing governments. And so you let one of those fall into the wrong hands, and that whoever grasps that has the ability or would have the ability to essentially make sure that no one could ever dissent again. How would you gather? You know, I think about the American Revolution. You know, they got together in taverns and pubs and talked about their plan. How would you do that? You couldn't even get together. If you were on a suspicious list, anybody could be seen being even in your vicinity. You know, they want to put RFID tags in our boarding passes so they can watch us move around the airport. So they'll know how long we spend in the bathroom. So we'll know who we stand next to as we're boarding our flight. So we'll know who we sit next or near as we're drinking coffee in the Dunkin' Donuts. You know, this kind of information could be incredibly, it could be incredibly powerful, and it would also be very easy to make someone a total non-person. You know, they would not only know you, but your entire web of contacts, everyone that you associated with. You could scan, what was the example that I was giving recently to a journalist? Imagine a First Amendment event that's protected right now, like depending on your politics. Let's say you go to a gun show, or let's say you go to a peace rally, or let's say you go to the Democratic National Convention, or maybe a talk by a prominent Muslim cleric. Right? Any one of these events is protected by the First Amendment, your First Amendment right to assemble, and their First Amendment right to have free speech and talk. But, well, currently it would be inappropriate, to say the least, for the government to bust in the doors and at gunpoint demand everybody to turn over their ID. But what they could do is mill around that event and collect all of the RFID numbers associated with everyone at that event. You wouldn't even have to know what the items necessarily were. The fact that they have unique ID numbers, and that's the second thing that makes them different from a barcode we didn't quite get to, but this unique ID number means it's possible now to identify everyone at that event.
Could they have fraud? Could someone say, I'm going to take Catherine's ID number and use it, and everyone will think she's at this thing.
Absolutely. I mean, you could rummage through my garbage and pull out, you know, a can of soda that I threw away. And, you know, they're even talking about putting RFID on individual pieces of paper. So, absolutely. I mean, it means your garbage becomes a commodity you have to guard very carefully.
Well, so let's assume, let's say there was a murder for some reason, and all of a sudden your soda can was there with your fingerprints on it because somebody pulled it out of the garbage.
Sure.
Cops will knock down your door and say, you're a prime suspect here.
Well, and I think that's one of the things they're going to tout is the reason why we want this. We want to know what everything is registered to, who everything is registered to, because once we know that, then we can easily take an item and trace it back through its ownership history and know who it belongs to and who it was registered to. So if you go into this event, like, you know, the Democratic National Convention, for example, and you scan all of these numbers, not only do you know everybody who's there, because you get a pair of size 8 women's shoes, number 308247, the only item with that number on the entire planet, and you can look it up and see that was registered to me at a Foot Locker last week, then, it makes it possible to create an everything registration system and to know, if you see an item, pretty much who is likely to have been there. Let's say in my pocket I have a cherry chapstick that my husband bought at a Walmart, 6 months ago, and I happen to drop it in my pocket. Now you know my extended web of contacts. Let's say I'm wearing a watch that my mother gave me for my graduation, and she bought it on her credit card. Now you know who to begin questioning if you want to know more about me and all of the people I affiliate with. So it creates the ability not only to know who you are, where you are, what you have, but who you're associated with, which I think opens up a whole can of worms in terms of our government, which is quite intent on surveilling every aspect of our lives at this point.
Are you being just a little too paranoid about this?
Well, let me address that, because I'm very glad you're asking that, because I'd hate people to leave with that impression. You know, the notion that all of this stuff will be registered is actually what I have been studying for 4 years since I founded Caspian. And when I first started looking into the grocery store loyalty cards, what I found was just horrifying. I found that there's an organization called IRI, three letters, that registers a huge number of purchases made in this country from all different retail chains and consolidates them all into one master database. And they use that to provide actionable insights to their member companies. But they claim to have 32,000 different retail stores that they link all of the information from. So there already are databases in place and structures in place that can consolidate all the information from all of the point-of-sale cash registers around the country. These loyalty cards that facilitate that process are now in place all over the world. They're in the United Arab Emirates, of all places. They're literally everywhere. Every country on the globe has one of these programs or more. So we're moving to a point where every purchase is being registered and recorded in a database and linked to the person buying it. It would be a very small step to then move to recording the EPC numbers or the RFID numbers off of those items. Now, the question then becomes, well, gee, how would the government get a hold of all of that data in order to do some of the things I'm talking about? Well, do you remember the Total Information Awareness Program?
Yes.
Later renamed the Terrorism Information Awareness Program,
and
its step cousin, the Matrix Program. Well, essentially, our federal government, through the Department of Defense, has decided that it has a right and a need to know every commercial transaction that occurs in this country. Literally, every time you go to the bank, every bank transaction, every telephone call, every time you use your Kinko's photocopy card, every time you do anything that winds up in a database, they want to consolidate all of that into a master government-controlled database and have data mining programs, software programs, observing those interactions all day long, 24 hours a day. Now, you take that and you couple it with these EPC numbers, which are unique, and now you have the ability for marketers, for government, for industry, and overall for the government, the folks in law enforcement and the folks who make their living watching people, to know, you know, every item on the planet, who it belongs to, and if they see it, whether it's at a crime scene or whether it's on your person or whether it's driving at 60 miles an hour under an overpass, to look that information up and know who has it and where they have it. So I think unless we're careful, I believe that our children and our grandchildren's generation are going to judge us very harshly on how we handle this particular technology, because I think above and beyond any other technology that I've encountered, this has the ability to really change fundamentally.
This scares you, doesn't it?
It terrifies me. I mean, I spend nights awake. This is why I've been doing this work since 1999, without any form of payment. as a labor of love, I think, to the future.
Speaking of labor of love, tell me a little bit more about this video that you produced.
Well, I'm excited about the video because it's the first time I've had a way to get this information out, short of having people tune into a radio program or read it in the paper. They're wonderful folks at End Time Ministries. They deal with a lot of apocalyptic themes and, of course, that passage in the Bible in Revelation that we talked about before the break about the mark of the beast and how all this ties in. And they had me on their program as a guest a few times, and the response from their listeners was just overwhelming. And they invited me. They flew me out to Indiana last fall, and we filmed two one-hour videos. The first one is called RFID Tracking Everything Everywhere, and it is a one-hour overview, probably the most concise and the clearest I think I've ever been on this topic. And in that 1 hour, this is the video that you would want if you wanted to kind of summarize everything we've talked about during this program. And also it's the one that you can kind of show to your skeptical, you know, mother-in-law or to your pastor at your church or whoever it is that you want to convince that, hey, this stuff is real, it's coming, it's legitimate, and we need to get involved. And the second video is called On the Brink of the Mark, and it deals very specifically with the mark of the beast and how this technology could enable the fulfillment of that piece of biblical prophecy, which of course was made, 2,000 years ago before there were computers and before there were, there was even a concept of numbering people to buy and sell. And of course, here we are living one that may actually become a reality quite quickly. So those videos are available only through their website. They're the ones who are selling those. Their website is endtime.com, E-N-D-T-I-M-E, or you can call 1-800-END-TIME. And the gracious folks at End Time, knowing that I was going to be on this program, actually made a point of going into the office, and they're manning the phones now in the middle of the night in case any of your listeners would like to call in and reach a live person rather than a recording.
And what's that number again?
It's 1-800-END-TIME, E-N-D-T-I-M-E. I believe the videos are $20 a piece, and they're quite thorough. And like I said, I think it's probably the most lucid I've been in the shortest amount of time to really clarify all of this. And it's got all the pictures and images in there. So if you want to share this information with others, that's probably your best resource. And I'm also I have authored most of a book at this point with my fabulous co-author Liz McIntyre, who's worked with me here at Caspian for the last year or so. And we have a fabulous book in the works called Spy Chips, and we are actually searching for an agent. So
sounds like a movie.
If anyone out there has, either wants to do a movie deal or a book contract, we are definitely open to talking to them.
Spy Chips. I like that. And as a matter of fact, let me read this phrase that so many people know about. And he causes all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads. And no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark. Revelation. How did they know then, Catherine? How did they know?
Well, that's the question that I think a lot of people are asking themselves now. I first heard that passage. I think I talked about this the last time I was on your program, but it's such a good story, I think I might tell it again. When I was a little girl, 8 years old, my grandmother and I had just gone to the grocery store.
Save the story until we come back, okay?
Absolutely.
Let's do that, because I'd like to get your take on that once again. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. In addition, we'll open up the phone lines. I'm sure you've got a question or two for our guest, Catherine Albrecht. Back in a moment. Well, this is one fast night, I'll tell you. Catherine, why don't you pick up the story you were telling us when you were a little girl?
Yeah, well, at the age of 8, my grandmother and I had just gone grocery shopping. And when we got back, we were putting away the groceries, and she said, Kathy, and I went by Kathy back then, she said, have a seat. There's something really important I want to tell you. And she actually passed away about a year later, so I'm glad she did. And she said, there's something really crucial you have to know, and this comes from the Bible. And there's going to be a time when no one will be able to buy or sell unless they have a number and the mark of the beast. And I, at that time, I hadn't really been raised particularly as a church-going person. I didn't really know. I certainly had never read that in the Bible. And I said, you know, Grandma, explain that to me. And she said, well, everyone, the Bible's very clear that everyone on the planet, both rich and poor, both great and small, both free and bond, which means people in prison or people in captivity, will all have to take this mark. And if they don't have the mark and the number, they can't buy or sell. And I said, well, Grandma, you mean even groceries? Of course, as we're putting away groceries. And she said, especially groceries, that's how they're going to get people to sign up. Because if you don't take that number and that mark, you won't be able to buy groceries and you'll starve to death. So it was that that seems so outlandish and so outrageous to me now. This is back in the 1970s. And I don't know what was happening in other parts of the country, but in the part of the country I was in, which was fairly rural, you know, I'd never seen a credit card. I'd never seen a computer. The idea that somehow a system could be put in place that could number people and actually enforce a system where people had to have a number in order to buy or sell was so far-fetched to my 8-year-old mind that I made a couple of promises to myself as I sat in that kitchen. And one of the promises that I made was that I would pass this information on to my grandkids and their great-grandkids, so someday, thousands of years from now, when my ancestors or my descendants had to face this, they would know not to do it. Oh, and my grandmother also was very clear about the punishment for doing this, as it means, you know, essentially you are eternally separated from God and punished. So the second promise I made, though, is a more interesting one, and that was the promise that if this began to happen during my lifetime, because it was so outlandish and so impossible, that I would stop what I was doing, and I would, first of all, pull out my Bible and become a Christian, which I've since done, and second of all, that I would do everything in my power to let other people know about that so that they also would be informed. And that's a big part of what I've spent the last couple years of my life doing. When I first realized that the grocery store loyalty cards actually represented numbers that people were having to present to link them into databases so that numerical representations of what they bought and who they were could be made. And when I began to realize the trajectory for these cards, which I do believe they will become mandatory at some point here in the fairly near future, that people will be forced to register their purchases of food in a database using some sort of numbered card and ultimately a numbered chip.
Right.
When I made that realization was when I decided to found Caspian in 1999. And Caspian is actually named after a character in C.S. Lewis's Chronicles of Narnia. There's a Prince Caspian in there who's one of my favorite heroes.
Yeah.
And for people, you may have heard of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, fabulous series of children's books around
the fictional
country of Narnia. What a lot of people who know and love those books don't realize is that C.S. Lewis was a Christian theologian and wrote some extraordinary books for adults as well. And I just so admire him and his philosophy and his approach to things, and decided to name our organization after Prince Caspian, who, of course, went around and righted wrongs. One of the ones we mentioned on our website is he actually went to an island where the people on the island were engaging in the slave traffic, in the slave trade. And that seems so much like what corporations are doing today with our data and our private information and with ourselves and with our dignity, that I really do sort of envision a consumer consumer crusade that says, you know, we're not your slaves and we won't be your slaves, and we're going to stand up and fight back for our rights to have privacy. And while Christian Caspian itself is not a Christian organization, I want to clarify that for anyone listening who is not comfortable with that. We have members from all spectrums, all walks of life, all professions, all different areas of philosophy and background and religion. We welcome people from any belief system. But my own personal reason for being involved in this fight definitely has to do with that promise I made in a little kitchen at the age of 8 with my grandmother. And I do believe that at the very least, I think anyone, even someone who's not a Christian, has to acknowledge that the potential for that particular prediction to become a reality is here now. We have the technology now to do it for the first time since that prediction was made 2,000 years ago.
All right, let's go to the phones. You ready, Catherine?
Absolutely.
Let's go to our wild card line. Welcome to Coast. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hello, George.
Yes.
I have a question for your host, Joyce.
Catherine,
I'm sorry.
Yep, and she's standing by. Go ahead.
Catherine, my question is, Do you think someday that it will be possible for us to have the chips in our arm? And do you think it may be used as medical reference to see if there's a cancer growing in us or some other disease?
Well, you're probably talking about the convergence of radio frequency technology with nanotechnology, the idea of actually using tiny machines or computers in the human body that are small enough to actually detect cancer and possibly even eradicate cancer in the human body. I have not seen any proposals to link the two, so it, certainly down the road I think it's possible, but I have not yet seen that possibility. The closest I've seen to RFID being used in a medical purpose is there are RFID-enabled pills, actually pharmaceutical pills that you swallow, that would be time release, would enable a doctor to detect what pills were in your system. One of them I was recently reading about for a study to study women in menopause was an actual temperature sensor that went down through the digestive tract and kept track and transmitted the temperature of the inside of a woman's body so that they could see when she was having hot flash. So I think that we're probably going to see that application before we see the kinds of things you're talking about, but it's certainly not outside the realm of possibility.
How many companies are making these chips, just Applied Digital?
Ooh.
Or are there more?
Well, as far as the implantable chips that are going into human beings, Applied Digital is the only one that I know of that's publicly acknowledged that they're doing it. We've got all sorts of other companies that are making chips for other purposes. And with the USDA recently, the Department of Agriculture recently mandated the use of tagging in animals, they call it the from birth to slaughter, that would actually keep track of animals and note whenever they cross state lines or are transported or bought or sold. Those folks obviously are dealing in implantable and embeddable technologies as well. But as far as people who are openly talking about putting them in humans, they're the only people who are on record as far as I know.
Okay, let's go west of the Rockies. Your turn. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, this is Rick from Apache Junction, Arizona.
Welcome to the program, Rick. Hi there.
Good evening. Catherine, good evening.
Hi, Rick.
Hi, I was just, great information. I've just taken all of the loyalty cards for several grocery stores I've gotten and got rid of them.
All gone.
Well, let me give you a piece of advice. The one thing you don't want to do is get rid of them and shop at those stores, because if you do, you're the whole reason why these are profitable for them. The way they make money is that instead of offering the sale prices to everybody who walks through the door, they only offer them to people who present that card. Mm. And what that means is that a certain percentage of people, around 20 to 30%, in some cases more, some cases less, depending on the part of the country, but a certain percent of people are paying full price for items that the store got on sale. And so you're actually funding the store if you shop there without your card. So what we say is you've got two choices. You either can do the right thing and find a store without a card. I realize it's not an option for everyone, but I boycott those stores. I mean, it's as though they burn to the ground. I don't even see them anymore. They're not even shopping options for me now. So I drive out of my way to shop at a store that doesn't have a card, and I save money doing that, by the way. It's cheaper. Your other option, if you don't have anywhere else to shop, and I recognize a lot of people in the country now are in that boat, what you can do is go into the store and get a card and fill out anonymous on the form, and then only pay cash. Now, remember that if you pay with a credit card even once, even if you write Mickey Mouse at the top of the application, they will grab your name off the credit card, erase Mickey Mouse, and now they know all those previous purchases are all going to be linked to you. So what some people have done is they have two cards. One of them, they take a big magic marker and they write cash on it, and the other one, they take a big magic marker and they write ID on it. And if you're in that store and you have cash, use the cash one, which is anonymous. Throw it away every month or so. Get a new one. What the heck? And the one that says ID on it, that's the one that they use on the infrequent occasions when they don't have cash and they have to use something to identify themselves. So there's a little bit of a tip. But I would say boycott those guys, because the only way we're going to send a message to corporate America is if we start withholding our shopping dollars from them.
Now, you don't use credit cards. Do you use ATM cards?
Yeah, I have to admit I do use the ATM card, because it's really kind of tough to get cash otherwise in a lot of circumstances.
See?
I don't use it to make purchases. And every time I do, I think about it. I recently read something that said that those bank video footage cameras, you know, the ones to prevent bank robbery.
Yeah.
They actually can go back to the year 2000 and pinpoint any transaction and have it on film.
And they've got times, dates, even down to the second when you were there.
Yeah, absolutely.
There you are. But you know what? Those have thwarted some robberies, though, because, you know, some people have been robbed at these ATM machines, and thank God the perpetrator was on video, Catherine.
Well, but George,
they were able to find
it. But do you have to keep it back to the year 2000, or can you maybe decide to erase those after 3 or 4 days if no one reports a robbery, or if there's no crime has occurred? I mean, that's really the issue. It's the issue is how long, given that we have these enormous databases that can store pretty much anything, how long do we want that stuff stored? I mean,
and what's their purpose? I mean, why do they keep it for 2 years?
Well, and I'll tell you, the creepy thing is, as technology gets better, they can actually go back and use that footage that they've taken in retail stores and use facial recognition technology and retroactively go back and ID your previous purchases.
Amazing
so,
stuff.
Yeah, the problem is that they're not just the collection of the data, but the collection and storage of the data. And that's really where we object to this, is we say, it's one thing if you collect our data long enough, say, to process the credit card transaction. But once that credit card transaction's been paid for and we've written out the check, you need to delete that stuff out of your record.
Absolutely.
Just erase it. Yeah.
Let's go to our international line. Where are you calling from? You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there. There, I don't think it's working.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I sure can.
Excellent. I'm Dana, and I'm calling from Baja. I wanted to ask, were there any additional differences in the barcode and the RFID line of sight you mentioned and unique ID?
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you for getting me back to that. There are two other things, and I'll try to be brief here.
Is
the use of the unique ID number. On a barcode, every pair of 8.5 size women, size whatever, Nike tennis shoes, has the same barcode number. With RFID, everyone has a unique number. And so it's not just that if someone can scan your shoe and get the number off of it, it's not just that they know what kind of shoe you're wearing, because, heck, I could know that just by looking at your shoe. What's crucial here, and what's so different and what's so hard for people, I think, to grasp until they really think about it, is the fact that now I know the unique shoe, and you are the only person on the planet who owns that shoe or that can of Coke or that whatever it is. So if you go into, your local Safeway store and you buy a six-pack of Coca-Cola, down the road, and each one of those cans of Coca-Cola has a unique ID number, and you pay for it with a credit card or with some tagged cash or with something that I've grabbed your identity, I've essentially now registered those six cans of Coke to you. So if one of them shows up down the road, the litter police can pick up a can of Coke by the side of the road, scan it, and know that the only item on the planet with number 403981 is your can of Coke, and you could get a ticket in the mail for littering.
Right.
So, yeah, it's the unique ID number. And then the third way that they're different from a barcode is that a barcode doesn't really pose any health problems. Now, one of the very serious concerns about a world where an RFID reader is as ubiquitous, say, or ubiquitous means commonly located, as, say, an electrical outlet. Let's say every electrical outlet in your house functions as an RFID reader. They're all bombarding you with electromagnetic energy. Imagine every doorway, every shelf, every countertop, I've even heard proposals of putting these into park benches and on airline seats. So imagine all of this stuff is constantly irradiating you with radiomagnetic energy. And one of the things in those confidential documents we uncovered that I mentioned in the first hour, we actually found that the folks working on this technology had some very serious concerns about the health effects of this type of exposure. They did quite a few studies, and their conclusion, actually they looked into other people's studies across Europe and elsewhere, and their conclusion was, we simply don't know. We don't know enough. We need to do more studies. Now, they won't tell you that. That you have to look at our confidential documents that we got from them to find that out, because they'll tell you, oh, it's perfectly safe. But we have some question marks there about whether it will be safe to bombard elderly people, pregnant women, children, with this type of energy everywhere we go.
Have they started putting this in passports yet?
There is a plan. In fact, I was one of the signers on an opposition statement to this. But yes, there are. The United States has issued some passport guidelines that would involve RFID in the passport, and that raises a whole other set of issues of, do you want to be remotely identified from your passport as you travel in other countries where potentially there's criminals and other governments that may not be friendly to Americans, and is that really something you want to be beaming out about yourself? There was a recent article that said over 1 billion billion people, you know, the market for RFID on people is over 1 billion because, you know, the passport of the future is going to contain an RFID tag. And, of course, at that point, someone steals your passport or you could trade it with someone else. That's going to be the perfect justification for embedding it in people's flesh.
All right, let's go.
I'm sorry, your caller had one more question that I don't think
She is not on because it's time to move on to another caller. I have to. You've got so many calls, Catherine. We've got to limit
how
many questions people can talk. And also speak up when you're on the phone, all right? Wildcard Line, welcome to Coast. You are on the air. Hi there. Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry, George. I didn't know it was me.
Yeah, go ahead.
The only question several things that come to mind on this. And first off, I don't believe that anybody's going to allow something to be embedded in their hand. I would never allow it, number one. And number two, the company I work for is a pharmaceutical company where we distribute to pharmacies. And the biggest problem we have is counterfeit stuff. And so they're thinking of going to this RFID from the manufacturer to us so that when we receive it, we know what's in there was sent from the manufacturer to us. And then when we go to send it out, we can check it before the order even leaves the building to make sure that the pharmacies are getting exactly what they ordered. Does the patients get it? Now, the ID would be on the outside of the packaging, so it's not going to affect the inside of the product inside. So there's no way anybody's going to know unless the pharmacy attaches another ID to it. You see what I'm saying? So for us, it's a beneficial thing.
Right.
But when it comes right down to it, you know, I'd never allow one of these in my medicine cabinet. That's for damn sure. You know, and I work in the industry. So
no, I don't blame you. I wouldn't put one in my hand either. But the problem is we may be forced to.
Yeah, well, I think the American public would uproar something fierce before they'd allow something like this. I think it's a pipe dream if anybody thinks they're going to actually get through with it. You know, a Social Security card is one thing, but, you know, as far as from my company's standpoint, which I can't name, obviously, you know, this is going to help us distribute to the patient better and more efficiently.
I mean, there are some positive things here, Catherine, aren't there, like he just said?
Well, I can acknowledge the positive things. And in fact, we have a position statement that says that tracking counterfeit pharmaceutical products is one acceptable application of RFID, provided that that tag is removed long before it gets anywhere near the consumer. You know, and again, that's an industry supply side type of an issue. I applaud you, the caller here, for your stand that people would be outraged about it. I like to think that would be the case. Let me just point out one little personal experience I had in fighting supermarket cards. I know a 15-year-old girl, and she said to me, "Yeah, it's so cool that you're on TV and you're in all these magazines and you're on the radio and stuff, and I really hope you win, but, you know, I only have one question I haven't been able to figure out. If you get rid of these supermarket grocery store cards, how will the store know what you bought?" So, you know,
bingo.
It may be obvious to those of us who are a little bit older, but if we raise kids surrounded by this stuff, I mean, this girl has never known a time when there wasn't a loyalty card at her grocery store.
Back in a moment. Back in a moment. Hold on. Catherine, is there any way of neutralizing one of these devices? Can someone render it useless?
Well, they're designed to pretty much live forever. They've been able to put these into laundry. They can withstand high temperature washing and drying through commercial laundry facilities. They can withstand sun. They can withstand rain. Magnetism, you can run a magnet over them and you can't kill them that way. Just about the only thing that can fry an RFID chip is a high dose of electromagnetic energy. And for most of us, the only form of that we have access to is our own microwave ovens. If you put something with an RFID tag into the microwave oven and you turn it on, even for a second or two, you will hear a britz and a sizzle, and it will fry the chip. And fortunately, the other thing it will probably do is set the item that the chip is in on fire. I have a number of fried items right here on my desk in front of me to attest to that. And the reason for that is because it superheats the antenna, which is made out of metal.
Speak up, by the way, Catherine.
It superheats the antenna, which is made out of metal, which causes the high temperatures, and it will essentially burn things. So I wouldn't put money or shoes or clothing in there. And then there's also the problem of Michelin tires don't fit in a microwave oven. So essentially, I think the answer for most purposes is no. It is quite difficult to kill it. If you can find the tag, you can cut the antenna off of the chip, and that will disable it, because without the antenna, it can't transmit. Unfortunately, the latest generation of RFID tags, the antenna is so small that you almost can't even find where the item is in the first place. So that's one of the problems.
Does any of this technology require approval or legislation?
Well, the only legal requirements on this technology right now are FCC regulations that say that your reader device has to be within a certain safe, they call it safe range of emanation, and it can't interfere with other electronic devices. Other than that, there is absolutely no legislation or legal requirements on this technology. One of the things that we're calling for as a temporary solution, or at least the first step towards a solution, is a law that would require that any item sold in the United States with an RFID tag on it would be clearly labeled as containing a tag. So the idea here is that you would not accidentally buy a pair of shoes with a tracking device embedded in the rubber sole that you didn't know was there and have, meanwhile, everybody and his brother tracking you. The shoe would still be available for sale with that tag in it, but it would say clearly this pair of shoes contains an RFID tag, and our hope is that the majority of consumers will say, I don't want to buy the... I think I'll buy the shoes without the tracking device. Thank you very much.
I'm not sure if it would bother me, to tell you the truth. Tracking device in my shoes. Who cares?
Well, it depends on where the reader devices are. I mean, the tracking device in and of itself doesn't do a thing. It's when you couple it with a reader device. And if you move to the plan that Japan has, for example, with the RFID reader devices in the sidewalks, which, by the way, they say they're putting in to help blind people find their way around the city, as if that would justify the multi, hundreds of millions of dollars it would take to do it. But in any event, if any place you stepped, any place you went, your shoe would be transmitting your identity, the time and place that you walked, into the Arco gas station or walked into the courthouse or walked across the street. So essentially, computers could keep tabs on where you went all the time. Now, some people don't care. A certain percentage of people will say, bring it on, I love it, fine, go ahead, track me. Those people, I think, should be, if they want to be tracked, that's their business, and I'm not looking to stop this technology from evolving. What I am looking to do is to stop it from evolving to the point where it requires people like me who don't want to be tracked to have anything at all to do with it. So
right.
That's really the difference. If you want to be tracked, more power to you, just don't force that choice on the rest of us.
First time caller line, it is your turn, you're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Mike from Idaho.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Catherine. My question to you is, how do secondhand stores fit into this model of item tracking? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Well, at the point when the items become, when the tags become cheap enough to put on everything, it will be, my guess is it would probably be a condition of sale that everything contain one of these items. Ultimately, and I'll make a little prediction here, ultimately I think what's going to drive this technology being required in everything is going to be a move towards a national sales tax. And if you want to talk about one of the worst good ideas that anybody ever came up with, it's the idea of moving from income tax, which is horrible and abysmal, to national sales tax. If you move to national sales tax, it means that the government makes its money off of monitoring what gets bought and sold. And that means that if you try to sell something without it being monitored, you will be breaking the law. So at that point, I think RFID will be a tremendous tool in the hands of the people who collect taxes to make sure that, for example, they could scan you and actually say, hey, prove that you paid for everything that you're wearing and that you paid the taxes on everything you're wearing, and unless your RFID number shows up in our database of paid taxes, we can haul you in.
I don't know. I'd love to get rid of the IRS and get 100% use of our money, wouldn't you?
Well, but think about what the IRS does. Well, you wouldn't get 100% use of your money. They're still going to tax you either way, George. if they could get rid of taxes altogether, that'd be great.
But sure they'll take out Social Security and Medicare and stuff like that.
Well, the idea here is, and many people are suggesting that we move to a national sales tax.
Right.
A use tax, basically.
That's what it is, a use tax.
The problem here in the past has been that it's a regressive tax. It's unfair to the poor who spend most of their money every month, and they would be paying a higher tax rate. RFID makes it possible for everyone to have their own unique sales tax rate. So every time you press your hand to the payment plate, you know, with your little chip in it, it would say, hey, you know, I'm a person who earns a lot of money, tax me at the 90% rate, or I'm a person who doesn't earn anything, tax me at a 2% rate. The problem of moving to that is that not only does it identify you with every purchase and make that a condition of making a purchase that you identify yourself in your tax bracket, but it also means that the physical items would have to be registered, and if they weren't, it would be a form of almost checking to make sure that the you know, that the tax had been paid. So that's the concern there, that, you know, you wouldn't be able to come over to my yard sale and buy a couple of books out of my backyard without me transferring them over to you. So the idea with the thrift stores is, my guess, is once these items are, you know, a penny a piece, or a fraction of a penny a piece, that will almost be like the price tag. You'll just slap that item right on there. And by the way, I was just recently reading that there's a country in Europe, and I can't remember which one. Email me and I'll find out.
And how are these things powered, by the way, too?
Well, the country in Europe can actually stop you on the street and demand that you show a receipt for things in a shopping bag to make sure you paid the value-added tax. I just wanted to say that there's a precedent for that, doing that. They are powered. The chips themselves come in two versions. There's the passive chip, which has no internal power source. It is powered by the reader itself. The reader device in the environment sends out a burst of electromagnetic energy. It's picked up by the antenna, and it powers the chip to say, here I am, I'm chip number 406981. The active devices, which are the ones that you see in the toll pass, you know, the one you use to get through the toll booth without paying, those have a battery in them, and they have their own power source, so they beam out their information to the reader device, and they actually have a much longer read range. Some of those can reach over miles to transmit their signal. The passive ones that do not have their own power source have a read range of, currently it's up to about 30 feet.
30 feet?
Believe it or not, yeah. Well, it depends. Some of them are, you know, just a couple of inches. Some of them are, you know, 5 feet, 10 feet, 20 feet, 30 feet. It depends on the frequency they're operating at. It depends on the size of the antenna. And it depends on the power of the reader, how much energy the reader is sending out. But, yes, it's possible to get a 30-foot read range on a passive RFID tag.
Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to our wild card line. It's your turn. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, George. This is Marcia in Van Buren, Arkansas, listening on KWHN 1650.
Hi, Marcia.
Catherine, I'm very glad to hear this. I have had some information. I have wondered how to get it out. First, two news stories that I've heard within the last 6 months. Gillette Company is going to the RFID, but it's also going to what they call a smart display, which video monitors every person at the display. This is supposedly to help cut down on shoplifting. If you pick up an item and walk out of the store without purchasing it, they can go to the video and find out who picked up that item.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. That's actually our work that uncovered that and disclosed it. We have the Boycott Gillette website is actually our website, and you can find that online at boycottgillette.com. It's also linked from our spychips.com home website on RFID. So if you go to spychips.com, you'll see the link right there, and you can click up all the information that that you're telling us about. We have evidence and video and photographs of this shelf that actually detected every time Mach 3 razor blades were picked up and used a hidden camera to take a close-up mugshot of every single person's face who picked up those razor products.
Close-up mugshot, and just show their stubble of their beard, right? East of the Rockies, you're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hi, how you doing, Fred? This is Fred from, you get me confused now. This is Fred from Louisville, Kentucky. How you doing, George?
Good, Fred.
I tell you what we need to know is there a way to find out about them shopper cards? There's a way to find out what the numbers mean on them. Like, you know, on your Social Security cards, the first three numbers actually is where the area country got them things from. Then I got a comment after that too. What's the comment?
We can move right to your comment because the answer is they don't actually mean anything currently. Each of those systems is based on the proprietary database of the individual store. So as of now, to the best of my knowledge, they don't have any particular meaning other than to link to your individual record.
So you could make up any numbers and work on it almost.
Well, it would have to be a number that was contained in their system.
Okay. Well, the comment was, couldn't you cut off, like, say you get a six-pack of RC Colas and cut off little RFID tags on them. You say you get about six or seven of them and keep them with you at all times. You just go in the store and it freak that machine out thinking you got 60 or 70 RCs with you.
Well, the only reason that wouldn't work is that the store knows what it's already sold out of its inventory, and it knows what it has in inventory once you move to this system.
But like walking down the street, the ones that down the street, you pass by and it thinks you're carrying 60 cans of pop with you.
Yeah, it's funny. I've had some people even say, I'm going to take a washing machine tag and I'm going to take a combat boots tag and I'm going to carry all this stuff around and just confuse the readers. And yes, indeed, it would definitely have that effect.
Well, if enough people do that, then the tags would be useless almost.
Well, wouldn't that be a start? There's a product out there called the blocker tag, which is supposed to do that. It basically sends a whole ton of signals to any reader, and it's supposed to drown out the signal from anything you actually own, so it wouldn't be able to be distinguished.
Okay, thanks for your call, Fred. How much time do we have? A couple more calls. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hey, George. Quick question. What would happen if a child was born in a hospital? Say that they have the RFID out right now, and you don't want your child to have an RFID tag of them. The parents refuse to take it, but will the child still have a choice, to have or not to have the RFID? And I would like to hear the answer on the radio. Thank you.
Okay, sure thing. Thank you.
Well, currently, it is optional to have a social security number assigned to your child in the hospital when he or she is born. They do it automatically, but you can request it not be done, and they won't assign your kid a social security number. But of course, the first year you go to pay your taxes, you will realize that you cannot take the dependent deduction from your taxes. So you actually wind up paying more taxes than the person who did take that social security number. My guess is that initially we'll see the same thing with the chip. The people who take it will have some incredible benefits or discounts, and the people who refuse it will have some pretty steep penalties, whether financial or otherwise. And ultimately, if your child decides to continue to not have a social security number, when he or she turns 16 or 18 and tries to get a job, they won't be able to. We'll probably see the same thing happening with the chip.
Final call. Let's go to our wild card line. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Yes, good morning, George and Catherine. This is an excellent and very important show. My question is this. John Lear was on the air with Pilot was on the air with Art whenever. And one of the points he made was that as a pilot flying 19,000 plus some hours, that he felt in terms of 9/11 that it's very difficult to hit buildings, and there's just so much that just doesn't add up. A crime scene that's never been investigated. John Lear mentioned that all we have on as Osama being the culprit is a tape, and that's really not something that would stand up in court. My question to Catherine is that the Patriot Act was pretty much the wish list off the shelf, which the Congress people didn't read. How does this tie in to the RFID, and will it pretty much be a piece of cake in terms of how this war on terror has been set up, and the fact that, for example, people...
Okay, well, let's get a response, because we've got about 35 seconds to go.
Well, let me say that if you did want to create the circumstances to enable people to be accepting of all of these invasions of our liberty, that certainly that would that would do the trick. And that's why I'm very concerned that if we have another terrorist attack or any other sort of national security concern, that will be the impetus needed to say, hey, it's time to start chipping our children and our employees and everybody else across the country. So I think it's definitely a possibility.
So you think they may use a real bad situation to push
this? Well, it's hard to know how these bad situations come about, but there are definitely opportunistic forces that, regardless of the source of a bad event, will be waiting in the wings to say, aha, here's our opportunity to get what we want. And what we want is total control and total surveillance. So, regardless of where it comes from,
Spychips.com, that's the one you want people to be directed to, right?
Yes, and the video is available at 1-800-END-TIME, that's ENDTIME. Please get a copy of it, share it with other people, and I'm going to make an offer to people in Texas where Walmart is doing RFID tagging. If you are interested in having me speak in Texas, I am all yours. I would love to fly out to Texas and speak to some large groups and get some protests organized outside of those Walmart stores.
And
so
where
let's
are you
hop
now?
To it and fight back.
You're in Massachusetts now?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Catherine, thanks, and keep in touch. Let me know what happens with this thing.
Absolutely, George. Thanks for having me on.
Okay. These little chips everywhere. Are they the mark of the beast. They just might be. For Steve Carr, Dan Galanti, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean La Desour. Who's he? Well, he's the other webmaster for Lex, Barbara Simpson, and Art Bell. I'm George Norrie. Somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM, I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.